Hi, good morning. I'm Jason Bargo. I'm from the University of Wisconsin's Global Health Institute. I was asked to talk about climate change and health, and there was a speaker on climate change science who was unable to make it, so I was asked to combine that part into this talk as well. So I'm going to go very quickly and cover a lot of basics. I don't know what level everyone understands this issue, so I hope it's not too remedial, but I hope it's useful. First, I want to thank a couple of people who were helpful in contributing slides. One just walked in, Dr. Jonathan Patt, and Dr. Steve Bavris, both from the University of Wisconsin, who helped a lot in sort of preparing this talk and helping me pull it together. I'm sure many of you have seen this type of description about how the greenhouse effect works. If you don't know much about it, it has to do with solar radiation and the gases in the atmosphere that trap some of that radiation. Of course, they don't trap the incoming radiation because the form of that radiation changes after it hits the Earth's surface. So you have shortwave radiation coming in from the sun, high energy, and then you have longwave infrared radiation leaving the Earth, and that's what interacts with the greenhouse gases. They absorb that longwave radiation and re-radiate it in all directions, back down to Earth included, and that's what creates the warming. So as you see an increase in the concentration of these gases, you see more of that energy radiated, captured and radiated back to Earth. And this can be described in a number of different ways, and you can begin to quantify the different parts of that balance, that equation, about how much is coming in, how much is leaving the Earth's surface, and how much is interacting with the gases. And that part about the interaction with the gases and coming and radiating back to Earth, that's what we're talking about mostly when we're talking about climate change. And you'll hear a lot, if you start to get into the literature and the IPCC's scientific basis for climate change, you'll begin to see, I should say IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, you'll begin to see a lot of discussion about radiative forcing, how much of the forcing of these waves back down to Earth is due to different gases, different components of the atmosphere. What we know, I mean, most of what you probably hear about climate change or know about climate change is a discussion around carbon dioxide. And what we know is that over the last 800,000 years, we've seen carbon dioxide go up and down, moving in response and ahead of and behind climate or temperature, because CO2 is not the only thing that determines climate. There are a number of different factors. So over the course of hundreds of thousands of years, things like the orbit of the Earth, the tilt of the Earth, the wobble of the Earth, the magnitude or the energy coming from the sun, all these things interact and form climate. The amount of runoff from weathering of rocks, these all affect CO2 and climate. So it's a number of issues, but really the one that we've been most interested in recent past is CO2, and that is because since pre-industrial times, we've been contributing a lot of new CO2 into the atmosphere. And so today we have carbon dioxide levels that are at 400 parts per million, which are levels that we have not seen in the past 800,000 years. And as I said, much of this new CO2 is coming from fossil fuel combustion in the industrial age. So I should say that before the industrial revolutions of England and the U.S., the pre-industrial levels of CO2 were about 278 parts per million. Now we're at 400. You can see that carbon dioxide is the main part of our emissions. There are a number of different greenhouse gases that we discuss here, hydrofluorocarbons, NO2, methane, and then CO2 from a number of different uses. The yellow is really what I'm talking about when I talk about combustion, fossil fuel combustion, and industrial processes. There's also some from forestry and land use. That's the red CO2. But then you see these other climate-causing greenhouse gases above that. But the main portion of it is from CO2, and that's, I think, what we'll be talking mostly about in terms of regulation and law. When we look at, so we know that CO2 concentrations are increasing. We also know that the planet is warming. These are things that we know definitively. You'll see that some of the hottest years on record come in the last 15 years. When we look at anomalies, we see a big cooling period, sort of this period of flux in the middle, and then a very distinct warming period that are the recent decades. And if you look at it on the planet, it's almost every location has experienced this warming compared to this long-term average. So these are anomalies compared to the long-term temperature in these places. There are a number of different ways to look at the warming of the planet, and we see it in a number of different records. We see it in temperature stations, we see it in ocean temperatures, we see it in sea level rise, we see it in sea ice decrease, we see it in seasons changing. So there are a number of different lines of evidence that support this phenomenon of a warming planet. I also want to talk about weather versus climate. This is often an important distinction to make. You know, think about the types of plants. Weather is something that might destroy these plants. You might have a storm come through and damage them. Climate is really what determines... I'm sorry. Well, this is a first for me. Yeah, I'll keep going because I don't have much time, but if you can stay, please do. If you have to leave, I'm sorry. Find me later. So climate is sort of determines what plants would go here. Obviously, the climate in the Southwest and the climate in the Northeast, you see very different types of plants. The weather is something that moves in and out from day to day, but climate is the long-term trends in the weather that we experience. I mentioned sea ice as another way that we've seen decreases over the Arctic. You know, countries are now fighting over who's going to get these trade routes. Permafrost is another thing that we see decreasing. So the stability of this permanently frozen landscape that we see in the northern regions of the planet is becoming more sporadic or discontinuous. That's leading to a number of different issues, probably that have legal ramifications in terms of property loss, infrastructure damage, sinkholes, and things like this drunken forest, where the trees have really been developing and growing under one condition of stability of the ground, and now are experiencing something very different. You also see sea level rise and decrease in sea ice are causing property damages on coastal areas, so very rapid depletion of coastal lands because of wave strength in a lot of places. And I should say that to dive into the greenhouse gas emissions a little more deeply, we can see that they come from a number of different sources. Things like transportation account for over 12 or 13% of our greenhouse gas or our energy use, and you can see that a lot of it feeds into carbon dioxide. If we look at it another way, you can think about it as the sort of direct emissions and indirect emissions. Direct emissions where we're burning energy, indirect emissions where we have behaviors that require energy or goods and services or materials that are put together that use some of these energies and fossil fuels to in their production. So not just using your car, but also producing the car involves some amount of carbon dioxide emissions. Now, relating these to health is very important, and of course, when we talk about health and air quality, we often talk about criteria pollutants in the U.S., things like ozone, PM, SO2, NO2, as you see there in the air emissions. But a lot of the oil and coal combustion, which is over half of the emissions, or the fuel uses, I should say, a lot of that leads to greenhouse gases, which you can see in the pink box of the air emissions, the NO2, the methane, and CO2, and the hydrofluorocarbons. And then this sort of moving left to right shows you how the energy use or fuel use leads to air emissions and then the health impacts. So we're familiar with this criteria pollutants and these local air quality problems, but the CO2 and the greenhouse gases are really related to these larger shared problems on a global scale, the global climate change problems. And you can see that the differences in the health exposures and outcomes are very different. Maybe it's not acute respiratory infection that you might see with ozone exposure or PM, but it's temperature increases, heat waves, extreme weather, and changes in rainfall. Now, climate change is generally, one would think about climate change affecting a number of different health outcomes, and I'll talk a little bit more about each of those now, but you can see that it covers a wide array of things, not only air pollution, but vector-borne diseases, waterborne diseases, water resources, food supplies, and importantly, forced migration and environmental refugees, and human conflict, I should say. One way that I've often found useful to think about is to begin to dissect that a bit or deconstruct it. Move from global climate change to the actual health effects. So on the left, you have global climate change. On the right, you have, in this case, a temperature-related health effect. And there are several steps along the way. You'll hear about temperature increase globally of about 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit since 1880. But that is very different for different places. Regional climate change can vary from that. That's a global average, the 1.4 number. So what you experience regionally is really what might determine your health outcomes. So for example, if you see more frequent heat waves, that might be the manifestation of regional climate change. And then the adaptive capacity of people in that place really determines how those exposures proceed to health outcomes. And at each point along this pathway, you can see that there are opportunities for sort of legislating moderating factors or dealing with new research that might have a more advantageous ability to mitigate movement through that pathway at one point versus another. Now, extreme events are often talked about a lot when we talk about health events, and John Henson was famous for saying it's like a pair of loaded dice, where you roll the dice and you have a lot more heat, extreme heat, on the dice, the red numbers, then you have extreme cold. And so it's coming up a lot more extreme heat. Another way to put it is to think about basketball. So this is another analogy that's been used. Climate change is like raising the floor of the basketball court. So now you're going to see a lot more slam dunks. But you can't really say that each slam dunk that you see is the result of climate change or raising the floor, because we have extreme events now, but they're going to occur more likely. And this is in part because of shifting the distribution of climate. You can see that even if you just shift the mean, we experience more more changes at the extreme parts of the distribution, these extreme heat waves and hot weather. And then if you increase variability, change the shape of the curve this way, again, you see extreme changes at the tails of the distribution. Now this relates to health. We can see it in things like the Paris heat waves in France. This is sort of the normal summer weather and mortality, but of course in 2003 we see a huge spikes in mortality that were trailing big increases in temperature during the heat wave. In most places, climate and temperature follow a U-shaped distribution, and this differs from place to place because people tend to be more accustomed to dealing with heat in different climates than others. But in places where they've seen relatively few heat waves, you might see a steeper part of the curve at the far right. It's important to note that the net impact of climate change has been found, especially on temperature, has been found to be negative. So they expect larger increases in heat-related deaths than decreases in cold-related deaths due to climate change. Extreme precipitation is another impact that's going to affect health. It will affect combined sewer overflows in a lot of older U.S. cities. This is something for Chicago a couple of years ago. But you can see that even in the lower emission scenario and the higher emission scenario, you expect many more of these heavy downpour events in the future. Those are the events that are going to be growing the most with climate change. By 2050, Chicago could see a doubling in the combined sewage overflow events. And I don't know how familiar you are with CSO, but that means that the runoff from stormwater and the wastewater is combined and discharged into the waterways. So you have sewage running into your waterways. And this is just a an example of the legalities that I've come across, talking about losses in Chicago and insurance companies suing municipalities for not doing enough to get residents out of dangerous zones, flooding zones. Just a couple other ways that I think climate might affect your health. You'll see a change in the plants that are grown. This is about the shifting of different plant hardiness zones in the U.S., what we expect. Different plants are moving north, seasons are expanding. You'll see that the days of ragweed pollen are changing, the season is changing, it's increasing, it's getting longer, it's showing up earlier in many parts of the country, especially in the north. There's also a kidney stone belt in the U.S. That's existed in the south for a long time, but it's spreading northward. And so you'll see the increase in these sort of kidney-related dehydration effects of extreme heat showing up in the population. Vector-borne diseases are also very important. This map shows Zimbabwe and the climate suitability for malaria and the vectors that carry it. You'll see that red is sort of definitely malaria endemic, and that's changing over time and growing immensely. Within the mosquito, the disease process also changes with temperature. And so there's an extrinsic incubation period, which is confusing because it's extrinsic of the human but intrinsic of the mosquito. So within the mosquito, the parasite develops much more quickly with temperature, and you'll see that happens for both both parasites related to malaria. So that increases transmission as well. And then, of course, physical health relates to mental health. We know that. The two are connected. And we've seen incidents in self-inflicted injuries during heat waves go up as well. Lastly, I'll just say that I want to be very... I definitely want to say that the people who are most likely to be affected by climate change are the people that have the least to do with it. And so poverty, I put up that slide about the pathway and the moderating factors about whether these exposures will really result in health effects. Poverty is a huge determinant there, and globally, the people who have had the least to do with this problem will suffer the most. I'll end there, but I think you know what I've covered.
Yeah, thanks.